Irish for that.
Oh, you know what, Ed? On our Instagram, NQAT Pod, if you didn't know, you
what's
put
on
this stuff. You put up this like story, being like, "Oh, with De Gea looking sad, and like, is anyone else like just waiting for this winter break to end?" And I just laughed out loud because about an hour before that, I'd really nearly messaged you and Tom to say, "I cannot tell you boys how much I'm enjoying not watching Man United this week."
Well, yeah, I know, but there's no football on at all. Although that's not quite true because the Premier League staggered the winter break, so. There is some football, or there would have been more football, but for Hurricane Ciara. Or maybe it's not a hurricane, it's a storm, isn't it?
It's a storm. It's too orangey for crows.
Yeah. Yeah, some fun stuff happening. Very sad WhatsApp group I have that you're not in, of me and some friends messaging, sending pictures of flight radar back and forth going, "Poor sods." They've just flown over from Buenos Aires, they thought they were going to land. Oh no.
So absolutely, yeah, obviously thoughts, the hearts go out to anyone who's like negatively affected by it. It's, you know, we're getting more extreme weather, obviously, as you know, as we know, and it's really sad to see. We thought we would do an AMA because there's no football. We could do a bit of a Chelsea preview, but that game, even doing a preview a week out seems kind of crazy. And wow. And
Friday. Given the zombie apocalypse that's happening with coronavirus, then, you know, like, we might not have any football after. Hey, wouldn't it be great if we all turned into zombies just in time to stop Liverpool winning the Premier League title?
You know that you have gone too far as a football fan when you'd prefer the death of the human race than your rival team to win the league.
There's a certain percentage of people who watch and listen to the news, and especially things like this, who want the worst to happen. There's actually a technical term for it. I've forgotten what it's called now. Just to see what would happen.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm there, but in certain special circumstances.
Also, you called it the coronavirus, which I think a lot of people... Is it not the coronavirus?
Is it? No.
I think it's the coronavirus rather than the coronavirus. But I could be wrong. I don't watch the news. So,
of a Sunday morning, I've had the coronavirus a few times.
Yeah. Anyway, like, the hilarious conversation topics of mass extermination events of one kind or another.
Coronavirus.
Is it? All right, that's so funny. I saw it once and I was like, oh, the coronavirus, because I assumed it was like a adaptation of the norovirus of some kind. But no, it's a whole new thing. Nothing to do with the Fast and the Furious. You won't get that reference, right? You've never seen those movies.
I've actually seen one or two of them.
You should definitely watch. You should definitely make a plan to watch all 7 Fast and Furious movies within fairly short range of each other, because there's a special kind of glorious internal insanity that you can only develop by doing that. They are true masterpieces in their own way of like... I think it was... what's his name? Werner Herzog, I think it was. Who said of WrestleMania...
I don't think he directed any of them.
He didn't. But he said of WrestleMania, like, maybe it was him, maybe it was someone else anyway, but this is, you have to watch this because this is proof of the death of civilization. It's absolutely extraordinary. Fast and Furious is sort of also the proof of the death of civilization, I think. Anyway, that is quite enough Extinction Event chat. Let's talk about the future of Manchester United.
A slow-moving Extinction Event,
yeah,
some might say.
We put the call out for questions. We're going to try and do all of them, basically. That's sure. What we're going to try and do.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, let's start with Andy McCoy, who says, at MacAttack on Twitter, "You're United captain and you take the team for a night out. At the end of the night, you round everyone up to get them home, only to realise 3 are missing. You're informed that 1 went for a kebab, 1 pulled, and the other was arrested for fighting. Which 3 players are missing?" Now, Ed, I'm putting a wrinkle on this. You are not allowed to say that Luke Shaw went for a kebab. Like, that's... Otherwise, that's...
You think it's too route one?
It's obviously, like, 90% of people at least would pick Luke Shaw to go for a kebab.
It's true. What about Phil Jones? Is that allowed?
Yeah, sure. If you think, that's...
Yeah. I mean, I think he'd injure himself in the kebab shop. He'd slip on a stray piece of doner meat or something.
Yeah, it's possible. All right, so Phil Jones goes for a kebab. Who pulls?
Anthony Martial.
Yeah, yeah, that was going to be my answer too.
He'd been in the club until whatever time it took. Probably about 11:05 known, old Anthony. He's got form.
Apparently his life settled down a bit now. Remains to be seen. And who was arrested for fighting?
Oh, it's so easy.
Marlon Brandon Williams.
Exactly, yeah. He arrested for fighting and winning the fight.
So I like that Daz Greer replied to this saying it's kind of like the fullback club on a night out. You go Shaw, Delo and Williams for those three answers. It could work. Do it entirely made up of fullbacks. All right, so at Balls says, how much extra pressure do you think Fred's comments will place on Ole, given the problems he identified and ones you would expect a quality manager to have sorted by now?
Yeah, it's interesting, this interview, isn't it? So a couple of thoughts. I mean, a few people asked this similar questions and we just didn't like the others. At Balls, yeah, nice chap. Or chap S, not sure. Anyway, it was on video, so it's not a mistranslation. I'm just going to assume it's not a mistranslation because it's out there. I don't know the nuances of Portuguese. I don't know about you, Paul. My Portuguese, bit rusty. Strange sounding language, though. I don't know whether you've ever listened to much Portuguese.
Sounds Russian.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, sounds hard.
Anyway. I like it, though. It's a nice language to listen to.
Yeah. So take it at face value that he's telling the truth, that there are people with their own agendas. He's hinting at people not fully committed to the club. Of course, the Twitter sphere reacted to that one in predictable manner, I guess, and that people need to sort of leave their egos at the door. Am I paraphrasing? Is that fair enough?
That sounds about right. I mean, he said there's too much vanity.
Yeah.
That felt a bit like, that's a word that can be translated a lot of different ways. So does he literally mean like people doing their hair? Well, I don't think that's what he means, but...
When he's talking about big problems at the club, you know...
That doesn't feel like... I don't think
you've been watching the Ronaldo doc where he's got, you know, four mirrors on every wall in his house.
Legendary Champions League game where he had a radically different hairstyle in both halves. But no, that interview, I make this point every 6 months or so, but when Fergie was the manager and the secret footballer column used to be in the Guardian every week, and it would always be like, yeah, football clubs are absolutely terrible behind the scenes. Everyone hates each other. Everyone hates football. Oh, the one exception to this is Ferguson's Manchester United. And like, we are so far from now being part of an exception to anything. Like this is, we are a fully normal football team. But this, I mean, if he said 50%, of what's been translated.
What it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Of 50% of the resonance, it's
pretty damning.
It's incendiary. And Solskjaer must be absolutely apoplectic because to come out and say there are players only in it for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Completely undermines the manager. I mean, look, it's in a way, so Solskjaer could react very negatively and drop Fred. We'll see against Chelsea on Monday, whether that's the case or whether they'll just deal with it behind closed doors, because everyone around Solskjaer says, well, he's got a lot of steel, even though he feels like, you know, competition winner in front of the press. So we'll see whether that's true or not. Of course, it undermines the manager so much because it may expose a truth, which he's not in control. And if he's not in control, it's the beginning of the end, isn't it? I mean, look, we weren't asked in this list of questions. Amazingly, we weren't asked in this list of questions about the sort of re-upping of the Solbakken stuff from Josimar, which is really hard to talk about without becoming potentially defamatory, right? So if you want to go read about that, go read about that. There is definitely a take reading that. As we talked about it briefly on a previous pod, yeah, because it's re-upped, right? It's not new. There's definitely a take you could have based on that article that says Ollie should go for his part in that whole thing. Right? You could definitely express that. And so that's one reason. His performance is another reason. And then not being in control of the team, that's another very good reason, if it's true. So
it's kind of interesting. Because, like, let's assume that Fred is not stupid, right? This is I think it's a reasonable assumption. It's the first time he's done anything like this. He's been very quiet throughout his time as he's been bedding in. He's like now a really established member of the team. He's one of the most important players in the team now. And that, you know, says a little bit about the team, but he has made huge leaps this season. For him to be coming out publicly and saying this stuff about the team, he's either got to be very certain of his position or doesn't really care what the result is in terms of United, because, you know, he sees his future elsewhere or whatever it might be. I wonder whether, I have to say, my instinct, assuming he's thought about it at all, my instinct is slightly the former, that actually he's probably thinking someone needs to say this stuff. It can't continue. We've got to lance the boil. And yeah, you know, it would be lovely to think that this had been discussed in advance, but there's just no way, like, that United don't do business this way. And you know, this is one of those moments where you just remind yourself, like, where are we? We're February now. It's 7 years since Fergie said he was going to retire. So we're 3 months away from 7 years since the end of Fergie. Got to stop thinking this wouldn't have happened in Fergie's time, because Fergie's time is now ancient history.
So, half a generation ago, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. 7 years before he left was 2006. No, was it? No, that's 12 years. No. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. So 7 years before he left was 2006. He was only just emerging from the doldrums. He had his last glorious period was his last 7 years. That feels like a long era, and yet it still feels like a kind of blink and he's just gone. But it's ancient history now. And this is, you know, this is just
A blink of an eye and we'll be talking about 10 years since United last won the title.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure, because it's not going to happen in the next 3 years. We're miles off that. Unless anyone at the club decides to drop, you know, 500 to 600 million on the team, and that's not going to happen.
And as we've said a million times, like, even then, there's literally no guarantee. I'm not convinced that we are actually going to sign Leo Messi, despite the multiple headlines this week, which, honestly, SEO people at football websites and newspapers should all be ashamed of themselves, because the story was like, Messi is not very happy at Barcelona, and all the headlines were like, Manchester United considering buying Leo Messi.
I thought that when I saw that. I thought, yes, zero chance. Messi able to leave on a free, well-publicised. He'll sign a new contract. He wins every political war at Barcelona. He's currently having one with Eric Abidal, who's the sporting director. I would imagine Messi will sign a new contract and Abidal will be out.
Yeah, I mean,
unlike Fred, who will still be at the club, I imagine, but we'll have to deal with the fallout from this particular interview.
So do you think it puts more pressure on Ollie, him saying that? Kind of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does, because it exposes a truth.
Yeah.
Right, so the narrative, the PR thing that, you know, Ollie is the man because he's doing the cultural reboot, right? He's culturally rebooting United. Behind the scenes, it's absolute steel, whatever he looks like, happy chappy in front of, you know, happy warrior in front of the camera. This says he has no control over the dressing room at all.
That's brilliant. That's such a brilliant observation. That's exactly right, isn't it? It completely renders, as you know, we've heard that spin a lot. It's always seemed like nonsense to me. Not that he was trying to do that, sure, but that was actually happening. I think you'd see it on the pitch if that was happening. You would, and I'm not saying we'd win every game, but you'd see something other than what you have been seeing. This was,
yeah. And what it does say is that the cultural reboot, if there is any, is just Brexit FC. And I'm sorry, we were being really superficial with that one, because it's like, sign British players, but you don't just sign British players and suddenly become a close-knit unit, a squad, a family again, all on the same page. That's not how it works.
I mean, it's just jingoistic, small-minded, nationalistic nonsense to think that, isn't it? Like, that's the, you know, obviously, like, cultural similarity is important cultural compatibility is important, but you know, that doesn't mean you have to be the same. I mean, look at Fergie's last great team was profoundly multicultural. It's one of the great, you know, triumphs of his incredible ability to adapt. You know, it was relentless. Anyway, next, should we do the next one?
Let's go for it.
Friend of the show at Benny Hudson says, now that we're seeing the greatest team ever, TM, about to win the league, winning it from the greatest team ever, TM, who themselves won it as the greatest team ever, TM, which of our Premier League teams gets the least amount of respect? Goes on to say in the media, but I don't really like talking about the media because I don't think it's a thing. But yeah, which United great side do you think is the most kind of like undervalued?
So I was thinking about this when I saw the tweet. I think it's the 2000-2001 team.
Okay.
So 99 gets loads of press. Great side, can't say anything about it, apart from Liverpool fans who all have you believe that it was the FA and we had all these rubbish players and it wasn't for the FA and their cheating, we wouldn't have won.
Haven't heard any United fans call them Liverpool this season and say that they're just lucky.
Well, they are, yeah. Fact.
Exactly, exactly.
94, 95, I mean, certainly it's a good report card from everyone. Sorry, 1993, 94 gets a good report card from everyone who's old enough to have seen that team and in the media too. So 2001, United won the league by 10 points, but Fergie fielded like a, you know, a youth side, the reserves for the last three games, which United lost, but they were on a great run. So let's assume that that could well have been a 19-point winning season. Lost three times in the league to Arsenal, pretty decent side even then, and twice to Liverpool, and that can happen in games against Liverpool. And, you know, the big shame, I guess, for Fergie that season was losing in the European Cup.
So who did we lose to?
Champions
who
League.
Who did we lose to in the Champions League? Any idea? No. Is it there? Is it on the tip of your tongue?
It's on the tip of my tongue and I can't remember. No. Let's carry on talking and I'll work it out.
Yes.
But I think that was a really good side. I mean, it was Rude. Rude scored 30-odd. It wasn't his big, big, big season, but it was a really good team.
It's interesting. I guess I'm going to say like a team that is nowhere near as good as that. But the team that was sort of the pre-Premier League winning team, so the Cup Winners' Cup team, kind of pre-Cantona, not pre-Cantona because he was there, but like that, just that team that's just about to emerge into true greatness is a really good team. But yeah, 93, 94, I think it's so extraordinary and it kind of gets played down a little bit. I mean, the fact that we won the double two times in a row? No, because we didn't do the double and then we did. Did we do the double-double? When did we do the double-double? I don't know. I can't remember my United is because we won it.
94 and 96.
Okay, so there was a gap, right? Yeah, there was a gap in between. But anyway, that...
Yeah, when the FA robbed us and banned Cantona.
Yeah, exactly.
Bayern Munich is the answer.
Right. Yes. Okay, Travis Bickle, 92, has a question, which...
Good handle.
Yeah, made me...
On Oscar night.
Slightly turned me into Travis Bickle, slightly, this question, in that I was violently angry about it. Are we confusing Ollie's legendary status with a legendary moment? No! No, nothing about... Listen, right, just wipe the last 9 months out of your minds. I was going to say a year, but a year ago today, as we record, this was the Fulham game, and that was absolutely amazing atmosphere. Peak Ole's at the wheel times. But wipe the last 9 months out of your mind, right? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is a Manchester United legend. Make no mistake about it. It was everything about his United career. It was his emergence as he arrived, this kind of like, he was bought for the reserves, essentially, to see if he could have something about him and was in the first team within 6 weeks of arriving, was the top scorer in his first season at the club. And then he could have left time after time after time. He was offered deals elsewhere. Spurs was the perennial link, of course, and refused consistently to leave because he'd rather be on United's bench winning trophies and being part of United than playing every week in their team. Plus, his whole battle with injury, his return from injury, his relationship with the fans throughout all that period, and his incredible gratitude to the fans afterwards. United legend.
Yeah, look, we'd consider the legend slightly differently, I think, if he hadn't scored that goal. Obviously, right? He would have a decent, if not spectacular record as a striker for United if he hadn't scored that goal.
But I
buy the narrative. I buy the narrative, but... It would have been 100 and whatever goals in 300-odd
games.
Yeah,
but how many of those were substitute appearances? I bet his goals per 90 is pretty good. Difficult to work that out in retrospect, but
I'm sure he overperformed his XG. Definitely can't work that one out.
But the thing about that moment is, it isn't just a legendary moment. It's the reason I think why he obviously, like, him scoring the winning goal in that game did something to his status at the club. But it's supposed to. I mean, 6 months before that, he'd scored the less than 6 months, 3 months before, 4 months before that, he'd scored the winner against Liverpool in the last minute to send us through in the FA Cup, which is part of the reason that we won that. And actually, you know, the 99 team, I think that might be the team that gets the least less respect than it deserves, because it deserves so much respect. You know, in the FA Cup, we beat Liverpool, Chelsea and Arsenal, who finished second, third and fourth that season. And we had to beat Barcelona. Well, we were in the group stage with Barcelona. We had to beat Juventus. We had to beat Bayern Munich. Like, compare that to some...
And Inter.
Yeah, you compare that to, like...
Ronaldo's Inter.
Certain teams' historic victories. I think you'll find that ours are a little bit special. Anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, you're bending the conversation away from Solskjaer there. Look, I think it's fair to say that without that moment, we'd think of him very differently. But he had that moment, so no questioning the legacy.
Jets and Gospel says, what will be the one PSG moment this season that will temporarily bring Paul back to Twitter? I've had my Twitter for this season.
United beating Sevilla in the Europa League quarterfinal. That's not going to do it for you.
Europa League isn't getting anyone back on Twitter. I can't conceive of a joy pure enough to bring me back on Twitter this season. Also, I think my Twitter account might be gone forever at this point. I tried to avoid that happening, but I lost my lovely, like, verification thing because I changed the name of the account, and you don't get like 12 months of leeway when you don't have a verified account.
No, we've changed your Twitter account name, haven't we?
I think it might be gone. It might be gone forever. Anyway. All right. So we've had multiple questions about Fred, which kind of covered. So just a quick shout out to Pranav Mehta and Jaho72 for the questions about that. All right. Bajoria Rishab, this is a question that I feel like we have every now and again. It's like kind of the last few years, this has been a sort of cyclical concept. Not to be revisionist, but what was LVG's time better than it felt? Yes, the football was dreadful. But reports say he was trying to rebuild the club behind the scenes, the academy, the training ground, medical staff. Was Jose the definitive mistake post-Fergie? Someone disinterested in the process of building a club? Great question.
Yes, I think I probably disagree with the first part and agree with the second part, if that's fair enough. I think it was pretty dreadful under Van Gaal, and he should have done more with the component parts that he had, and he got a lot of investment in new players and a lot of new players. We managed to do like 5 deals in one summer and somehow wasn't able to fashion those into something that worked to a functional team, or at least even a half entertaining team. So yeah, he won the FA Cup, but didn't do more than that. Of course, Solskjaer is going to achieve far less and keep his job. So
I mean, I guess
it seems anyway. And the second part, I mean, yes, it was a mistake because everything that Jose ended up doing, the fact that he doesn't care about what the fallout is from his time afterwards and his completely nihilistic approach was completely and totally and 100% predictable. We predicted it. And everyone who said that would be the case was completely vindicated afterwards when he did that. And now we're seeing some of the fallout. And Ollie's failing, but I don't think that's okay just because he's failing to be revisionist and say, well, look at Jose.
Yeah. No, and I think I'm not sure that Jose is the definitive mistake post-Fergie. I think the definitive mistake post-Fergie is Woodward. I would say that's the one single mistake. And also, I think it's hard to argue that Mourinho was more of a mistake than Moyes, for example, as the direct successor to Ferguson. But the Van Gaal era, you see, it's very easy to be revisionist about it because you've got things like the emergence of Marcus Rashford, the signing of Anthony Martial, these kind of like future-proofing moves, which have been very important, or not future-proofing, but future-minded moves. But, I mean, the second season under Van Gaal, the football was so horrific that the entire stadium gave Memphis Depay a sarcastic round of applause, not aimed at the player, when he was brought on against Sheffield United in, I think, the League Cup, the game that Rooney scored the last minute penalty winner. Might have been the FA Cup third round, actually. But anyway, because we had not had a shot and Depay had a shot and there was a sarcastic standing ovation given. The football wasn't just a bit dull under Van Gaal in the second season. It was unbelievably dull and profoundly ineffective. So,
yeah. I mean, Barcelona are seeing some of this from the Setien school at the moment, aren't they? 900 passes, one shot, that kind of thing. I mean, that would normally be an exaggeration, but I think there was literally one game when that was true.
That's pretty special. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I was listening to On the Continent podcast with Andy Brassel and people on the Football Ramble Network, and they were talking about the kind of crisis at Barcelona, and it really does sound like an abject crisis at Barcelona, who are 3 points off the top of La Liga and still in the Champions League. Like, yeah, it's like, oh no, listen, if you want a once glorious club in crisis, you're gonna have to look a lot harder than Barcelona. Thoughts on the goalkeeper situation, says at Kyrie_K17. Sell De Gea, bring back Henderson as number one, or keep Henderson out on loan at a team above us in the league for another season, or maybe risk losing him for good.
Yeah, well, I think, first of all, we have to say that De Gea signed a new contract last season. It's a 5-year contract and he's on absolutely massive wages, and that clouds the whole situation. So even if you were minded to say, perhaps, like, if you believed, I'm not saying I necessarily believe this, but if you believed that De Gea was in long-term decline and Henderson was on the upslope and may even overtake him, and that the appropriate and sensible thing to do would be to make sure that you kept Henderson, and because that's the best thing for the club, if not in the first season, but over the longer piece, maybe even in the first season, then you might look to shift De Gea out. But I think someone who's earning the biggest wage ever given to a goalkeeper in the history of British football, and depending on how you calculate it, he may even be the best paid player in England, then he's going to be almost impossible to shift out. Real Madrid don't need a new goalkeeper. Barcelona don't need a new goalkeeper. Paris Saint-Germain seem happy with Keylor Navas. Juve may want to replace Szczesny, but they're not going to pay those wages and a fee. So I think we're locked into De Gea. Henderson, I mean, the best situation might be to buy time. Get him to sign a new contract with a promise that he'll be given a real chance and then loan him one more season.
The thing is, the numbers for Henderson don't stack up too well either, because, you know, you just listed all the clubs that don't need a new goalkeeper. Even if they did need a new goalkeeper, I think the ship has sailed for one of the super clubs to be like, yes, this guy is definitely the guy now for David De Gea. I just don't think he's at that level anymore, which is kind of crazy given a couple of seasons ago he clearly was. I think if you think about, like, he doesn't have the absolutely elite level distribution that some of his rival keepers have, and he still has moments of superhuman reflex and ability, but he's made, like, plenty of mistakes in the last two seasons. And so, yeah, but like you...
Sure, and his shot-stopping percentage, so all the models, sorry to go back to the stats, but the... You know, model versus the shot stopping percentage versus the XG. He's down near the bottom this season for Premier League goalkeepers. So, you know, on that very narrow metric range, he's performing well under par. Again, you know, there are mitigating circumstances. We've had a lot of injuries in midfield. McTominay's been out.
But those are...
New defenders being integrated, blah, those, blah, 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 blah.
Those are mostly mitigating factors about the amount of XG conceded rather than mitigating factors about save percentage, I would say.
Sure, but it may be affecting David De Gea's confidence and so on, right? Is all I'm trying to say. So, But what we can't use is the excuse that we had last year, which was to say the contract situation is clouding his judgment. Mm. Now, maybe we can say the lack of competition. I mentioned this in an earlier pod. This is something apparently internally at United, they feel there is not enough competition for De Gea and it hasn't focused his mind. Dean Henderson may provide that. Henderson being the confident player he is. How confident is he? Is he so confident that he doesn't want to come to United and play second fiddle? Or is he so confident that he does want to come back to United and push to become that number one?
But who do you... I mean...
Lee Grant's going to leave this summer and it looks like Sergio Romero will too. So we need two more goalkeepers. Henderson may be one.
Yeah. We'll if he might be happy to kind of stay and play in the cup, but you know, even if like say next year's a holding year for Dean Henderson, either on loan or as United's kind of official designated number two with cup games, either way, a year later, this problem has not even nearly gone away. It's still 4 years more or 3.5 years more until financially it makes any sense whatsoever, or at least 2 more years after this, so at least 3 years from now, 2.5 years from now, that Henderson's got any realistic chance of being number one, I would say. Not like two more full seasons.
Yeah, but I mean, that may or may not be true. I mean, we're just trying to buy time,
yeah,
right?
But so what I'm saying is,
with that
we kind of need a lot of
time. If De Gea's form picks up, then Henderson's screwed. And if De Gea's form doesn't pick up, then Henderson's screwed because United can't get rid
exactly.
of him.
At Neil_Barsley, long time friend of the show, like proper back in the day times friend of the show, says, we're going to Manchester to see United for the first time in April. Is this a great season or the greatest season to see your first United game? I think about this. I have thought about this so often in the last 6.5 years now. Of just like every time that Sheffield United game that I referred to earlier, I distinctly remember leaving there thinking, there's probably at least 100 people in this stadium whose lifelong dream has been to see Man United play one day, and this is the game they got to see. It's just makes me so sad that people could like wait all their lives and dream of seeing United and maybe see one United game their whole lives, and not that we might lose because that's part of being a football fan, but they might get nothing worth seeing. So it's a shame, isn't it? So, I would say this is not quite the greatest season, but listen, anytime you can go to Old Trafford and see the mighty Red Devils in person, it's got to be a good season to see United. And we'll be back with more questions after this short break. If you want more from us, the people what brought you this here podcast, you can follow us on various social media platforms. Ed is on Twitter at NQATpod. You can find us on Facebook at No Question About That Podcast, formerly United Rant. Cheers, Facebook. Or my personal platform of choice, you can follow us on Instagram at NQATpod. A question for me here, Ed. You might have half an answer to this at this point. But at Sorala Pio, Mika Lettinen says, what are some of Paul's favourite games from 2019 and from the past decade overall? Ed can also answer if he's played any games. Ed doesn't get to play video games because he's too busy, even though he got a Google Stadia, which he'll get to enjoy for another year before they definitely shutter it. He doesn't agree with this, but that is what's going to happen. My game of the last decade is very easy, so I'll answer quickly.
I can tell you exactly why I don't believe that's true.
I think you already have.
I have some quite good inside info. But anyway, go ahead.
Red Dead Redemption 2. All right, 5 years till they shut it. Red Dead Redemption 2 is my game of the last decade and ever. I think it's a genuine masterpiece of the form. And 2019 was a weird year. I didn't play many of the new games. But the one, and I didn't finish this one, but one which kind of stuck with me and I found extremely charming is a game called The Outer Wilds. Not The Outer Worlds, which was a kind of Fallout-esque RPG, which is also good, but not my cup of tea. But The Outer Wilds is a sort of magical, kind of incredibly charming, brilliantly written and constructed space exploration game based on you living a time loop of 22 minutes over and over again and exploring this fictional solar system. It's kind of wonderful and magical. And it has space banjos in it, which is no better kind of banjo. Talking of space, you've been watching Picard?
Yes.
I really like it so much. And I don't think...
It's good. I really liked Discovery until it went weird in the second season.
So. I'm not convinced that I actually think Picard is good. It's just Picard's in it. So it's like I have no like filter for deciding whether this is good or not. I just love him so much.
So I don't think anything about Star Trek is ever innovative or cutting edge in any kind of way. It's always very soft and very happy, happy, jolly, jolly, and most of the time, right? And the peril that everyone's in is really quite mild, and they all come through it all the time. But you enjoy it for that.
The thing is, though, I do think there will be like some interesting sociological analysis that compares the tone of The Next Generation to the tone of Picard and what it says about the state of America's relationship with itself. Like, The Next Generation is so incredibly optimistic and diverse and inclusive and like beautifully simplistic in its kind of morality, and Picard is like, oh no, the Federation are bad now. They didn't rescue the Romulans because they're so xenophobic. It's like, oh, actually, we never believed this could happen, but now the darkness seems to be winning. It's like, oh, yeah, I wonder why that's happening now. Anyway, no one's asked us about Star Trek. That was my own AMA.
Would you mind? Just me? Yeah, why not?
At CP_Vorney says, discuss the inevitable move to a Netflix-style subscription service for Premier League games, pros and cons. Tifo Prost did a great video on this week.
Sure.
And an Athletic article was posted yesterday. Got to mention
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I read and watched and engaged in some debate with our friends at Tifo around this one. So my view is that the Premier League will go to a hybrid model over the next few years, right? So don't expect a binary style switch to over the top and not broadcasting. The Premier League has like 100 deals in different...
What's over the top?
Sorry, over the top means not in content terms, not through a cable provider or a broadcaster, right, as a channel and a rights deal, but over the internet. Cool. To an app or a streaming service of some kind, right? So the Premier League, like a few things. Premier League has had a streaming service before, and they have Premier League Productions, which has been around some time. It provides two things. In the past, it's provided infill for when they didn't have a broadcasting deal, so Singapore and New Zealand, a couple of examples. And they also provide kind of production and extra content for broadcasters who don't have the sort of full suite of production stuff, much like the NBA does for broadcasters around the world. Perhaps a little less progressive than the NBA in terms of their sort of digitization. I'm making words up now.
The second one's a real word.
Anyway, so my answer is, I think in certain markets, the Premier League will move to this over the next two cycles. So the next broadcasting round, I think, will be predominantly, and this is the one from 22 to 25, will be predominantly two linear traditional broadcasters who will pay a fee and charge consumers mostly through pay-per-view or pay-per subscription, with a few free-to-airs run off advertising around the world. But in certain markets, Premier League will do the analysis, which says we'll probably expand our market more if we don't do that and we'll go direct to the consumer. Then my second point is, it's much, much harder to go direct to consumer than a lot of broadcasters think. So in the Tifo video, they use this sort of approximate figure of 200 million as a sort of market ceiling. That's about how many people get access to the Premier League worldwide now through paid services. And that might well be true, but what we've seen with the rise of Netflix and now Disney Plus, HBO Max coming in May, and there'll be Universal One. We've got CBS, which does Star Trek, as we were just talking about, on their digital platform, is that it's really, really hard to transition consumers away from the old linear broadcaster to the over-the-top broadcaster for two reasons. One, really long contracts that the content creators have with the channels, and a lot of carriage fees. So you're kind of, you've got the drug of money coming in. Doesn't matter how successful your channel is. And then the fee in the case of the Premier League the big broadcasting rights. So it's just been a really slow car crash that everyone in the industry expected to happen much, much more quickly. And I only say that really long answer to say it'd be really hard for the Premier League to do this in the way they think they'd do it, because they'd have to spend a hell of a lot of money to advertise to people, to do all the production around it, which host broadcasters do themselves, and the cost associated with that. So, you know, all the interviews, all the analysis, or the punditry, all of that they'd have to do. Anyway.
Truly.
I don't think it's not going to happen quickly.
It's really interesting. Yeah. I think you're kind of very well placed to discuss that particular subject, Ed, and it's nice to have your thoughts on that. Interestingly enough, there's a question here from @JSF_7 about Ralph Hassenhüttl and asking a friend, oh, how can I mention Jay without calling him a friend of the show? That would be horrendously rude. Sorry, Jay. But he asked whether we would take Ralph Hassenhüttl as United manager. And I'm actually going to pause that question because yesterday I spoke with Carl Anker, who hosts the Athletic's United podcast, but is their Southampton correspondent. And we had a long conversation about the specific reasons why, while Hassenhüttl has some of what we'd want, ultimately he's probably better suited to a different type of job. So I'll let Carl, who's much better placed to answer that question, answer that part of the question. And then his second part of the question is also thoughts on United's complaint regarding sun photographers being outside Woodward's house.
Interesting, this one, isn't it? Yeah, on the first one, Hassenhüttl, I don't think he's got the profile United would go for anyway. Sure. To answer it from the United perspective, I think it's a very conservative organisation which has taken what seems like a bold decision with Ollie for very Woodward-esque reasons.
And the thing is, Jay's question is like, would we take him? And that's the bit where what Carl had to say was actually really interesting. So
matters, yeah. Good segue into Woodward. Well, I mean, you know, we had this conversation on this here pod where we said a little bit odd that there was a pro photographer just happened to be hanging around in Prestwich of an evening, you know, as they do, and also happened to get a bunch of quotes from these people who were causing criminal damage, apparently. Now, like, of course, what this doesn't mean is that the conspiracy theory that this is all a setup and these fans didn't exist at all. They weren't fans, or because of like this group of 30 is not in any of the photographs. So it's given more fuel to that gave fuel to the conspiracy theorists. What it doesn't mean is the conspiracy theory is true. It just means the Sun have behaved in a really appalling manner. Well, what a surprise. Yeah. But it will definitely give extra fuel to the conspiracy theorists as well.
Yeah. But either way,
because how did the Sun get the tip off?
Yeah,
in the week that Neil Ashton, former Sun, you know, etc.
That's the kind of super weird thing about this. It's like there's very clearly, I mean, it seems difficult not to infer, I guess I should say, that the articles which began to appear in Neil Ashton's friends' columns immediately after he was employed by Manchester United appeared to be, I inferred a relationship between those things. I have no inside knowledge and I may be wrong. They may have just been, may have been an entirely independent thought. Hey, who knows? But for that to then, for this to happen then, the kind of connections and interweb and relationships are weird. And that's not me saying I believe the conspiracy theory, I have to say, because I think on balance, I absolutely don't, because it seems to me that they're kind of, it is just as likely that a bunch of reprobates did reprobate stuff and wanted to get attention for it, although they never have in the past. Like, there's
no, and the other thing is that Woodward garnered from this one story better and more sympathetic press than he has ever garnered in his time at Manchester United.
Sure.
More sympathetic.
Yeah. Although the kind of the lengths of craziness that we're now talking about, like the lengths of paranoia and the depth of despair, like personal, like intense trouble that he must be in if he's actually arranging a conspiracy for people to like look like they're attacking his house and then getting the club to sue the Sun afterwards. Like he's in real trouble if that's what he's doing. But anyway, yeah, it was... Whatever's happened, the Sun have behaved despicably and are a despicable organisation, and anyone who works for them should be profoundly ashamed of themselves. So yeah, at Escape here says, this is a good question. This almost got me as badly as the Ollie is not a legend question. Now that the dust has settled on his final couple of frustrating seasons, is it time to consider Wayne Rooney our best ever Premier League player? No, no, it's absolutely not, because Wayne Rooney was absolutely amazing. But first of all, at his peak is not the best peak we saw in the Premier League, because the best peak we saw in the Premier League was Ronaldo's. His longevity was not the best, because we saw both Giggs and Scholes perform at a higher level for long, well, for at closer to their highest level for longer, with far, like, Giggs's worst moments were pretty bad, but they didn't have a patch on Wayne Rooney's worst moments. I think that it's, and until someone else wins 13, it's going to be real difficult to take this title away from Ryan Giggs, really.
Yes, yes. I similarly reject the question. No, he was not United's best ever Premier League player. Very, very good.
Amazing.
One. Who stayed for too long. But we'll be seeing him again
soon.
I'm so
happy about this. Like, honestly, I was just like almost jumping up and down with joy, because since he's gone, I have got fully like rose-tinted spectacles, glorious revisionism about how much I loved Wayne Rooney once. And it's just going to be, it's just going to be lovely. That he's going to get 90 minutes of White Pele chance, and it's going to be great.
Are you going to feel the same way when he pings one into the top corner in the 94th minute to knock United
out?
Fine.
Like, it's kind of inevitable. It's a bit like when Beckham hit the bar for Milan and everyone went, ooh, because they all wanted it to go in at Old Trafford. And when Van Persie scored against us in the Champions League and the whole ground rose to its... I mean, I think we were 4-0 up in both of those games at that time, so ideally we'll be 4-0 up when that happens, but...
I reckon Rooney will miss a last-minute penalty, because that's what he does.
Anyway. All right. At Apple Vinedra, Andre Greenidge says, seems there's a briefing that Relish, I'm going to assume he means Grealish, and this is autocorrect has cruelly tripped him up and put Relish in place of Grealish. I kind of might call Grealish Relish forever now, and this will be why. Has already agreed terms for the summer. Is there any chance he could actually be a summer where brackets correct needed targets that have been sounded out well beforehand actually sign early in the window? No.
No, 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 of course not. No, 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 no. So pick whatever number you think Grealish is worth and Aston Villa are going to ask, 50, 60, 70 million, whatever. That's the number that Villa will start the negotiations at. United will start with a much, much lower number. And Villa know that they, because we now have a pattern, Crystal Palace, Leicester, Bruno Fernandes, that United will eventually cave. Will cave. So just hold out. Villa's best chance of getting the most possible money from Grealish, if that truly is a United target, is to wait until September the 2nd, 2020, when they will extract even more than they first asked.
Oh, yeah, and it is going to be September, isn't it? Because the Premier League have revoked their unilateral disarmament, as you called it, in the week.
Yes, they have. Unsurprising. Look, it would be sensible for the whole of Europe to move to a set window. I mean, it just happens to be that the Premier League does start 2 weeks earlier than, say, Spain. It's not true of the whole of Europe. It would be much less disruptive if it did start before the season, but that's not going to be the case, because the rest of Europe sort of nodded along and said, oh, that seems interesting, and didn't do anything. And so, yeah, we've renewed.
Yeah, it's like the...
It won't make a huge amount of
difference. One area of British life where we're not going to be dramatically lagging behind Europe in a couple of years' time. At Uncomfy Silence says, in the current market, considering his all-round quality, our dire need for midfield leadership, the United/British player tax, what would a young Brian Robson cost us to buy? And once we found no value in the market, who would actually sign him? The problem is, I'm not answering that second question, because it has a very specific answer and I refuse to say it out loud. But the answer to the first question is 150 million.
Yeah, I mean, what was he, 1.5, something like that? 1.2, I talked to Wayne Barson for the Friday pod about the Ron Atkinson time, and he was Ron's first signing, I believe, and something like $1.5 million. It was an awful lot of money, and actually Wayne was saying on the pod that there were quite a few directors who didn't want United to spend this money.
Yeah.
Including Matt Busby.
Yeah.
Who thought it was an outrageous amount of money. So yes, it would be $100 million plus.
I love that interview, by the way. I had no idea that Sir Matt had resigned from the board over the Robson signing. It was absolutely remarkable. The one thing I didn't love, though, was seeing Ron Atkinson's mug on our Instagram pals. And I was like, listen.
No, I mean, so look, what I didn't ask. I went, look, go listen to
it's
the
really
interview
good.
And make your own mind up about it. I didn't ask about Ron's sort of racist past because it's not the book wasn't covering that period of his life. So I didn't want to delve into that.
But sod Ron Atkinson, like that guy doesn't deserve anyone's anything.
It depends. Do you believe
redemption?
Do you believe in redemption? Yes. Do you believe in redemption?
I do.
I mean, he said sorry an awful lot.
Oh, yeah. And then he said, if anything, I've over-apologized.
That was not good.
So, yes, I do believe in redemption. In fact, my entire life is based around the concept. But I believe that your apologies have to be sincere to count. And I actually have some empathy for his position, which is that it is very, very hard for him to understand why what he's done should have the tail on that it has. Well, it kind of hasn't now because everyone's like, oh, let's get books signed by Ron Atkinson and give them out to people. Like, let's get Ron Atkinson on all the podcasts, all the United podcasts. Let's host Q&As with Ron Atkinson. And like, that's what the United community are doing. Nothing about the way Ron Atkinson has reacted since would, just literally the fact that he says, if anything, I've over-apologized. That's a direct quote. Forget Ron Atkinson. And hopefully one day he'll actually have some redemption where he'll go, oh my God, I now understand because I've listened. But anyway. The answer is Brian Robson would cost a million billion trillions and it'd be worth every single penny.
A lot.
All right. Joey Mangini asked a question, which really is, I think, ultimately quite a flawed question, although I understand the concept of it, where he says, if you could only get rid of one entity, which would it be, Ed Woodward or the Glazers?
Yeah.
But of course.
Yeah. I mean, it's two for one deal in this one. Just get rid of the Glazers because Woodward goes.
Exactly. It's like when people would say, what would you rather do? Win the Europa League and qualify for the Champions League or finish fourth and win? Anyway, I remember a question where it's like, either both of these are the same. All right, here we go.
Would you rather do it with Ed Woodward or the Glazers? Is that the game we're playing?
I think that one has a really straightforward answer as well, too, but I don't really want to get into it. At Rusty Rooster, @Rusty_Rooster says, this is a brilliant question on the other hand. Antonio Valencia, Nick Powell, Danny Simpson, David Jones, Quinton Fortune, Jordi Cruyff, Kevin Pilkington, Gary Walsh, and now Odi Ighalo. Who's the best player to wear the number 25? What a list.
What a storied shirt this is. Yeah. Well, look, it's got to be Antonio, hasn't it? Because he's had such a long time at the club. And even if he wasn't the best right back in the world and not really the best winger in the world, except for, well, say for about half a season when he was pinging it onto Wayne Rooney's
head. One full
head.
Calendar year. He's like Smalling, he had one full calendar year. And Valencia did.
So, but the rest of that bunch, what a motley crew.
Spectacular. Odi Ighalo, like, I am extremely, talk about PR, it's worked on me. Like, all I care about now is Odi Ighalo having a nice time. it's a terrible, terrible, terrible signing.
Double, triple, a million training sessions, whatever he's doing. Yeah, he stayed back in Manchester because they're worried about the incubation period for coronavirus and that he might still have it. Potentially he's still infectious. Not that he has got it, sorry, I'll phrase that again. It's a long incubation period. He might have got it and might not know. Small risk.
So, anyway, I just, he's, if you want an object lesson in how to say the right stuff, The thing is, right, the reason it's an object lesson in how to say the right stuff is, it's because it's real. Like, that's the advantage it has. It's the ultimate rags to riches, not rags to riches, but like dream come true story.
Yeah, no, he's a player who's been earning £300,000 a week for the last three years.
Only riches. The rags to riches part, I don't know what his background is, but assuming, like, let's assume if he did come from not having money growing up, he's long since solved that particular problem. I'll do these in order. At one, Matty Viney says, in their prime, who would bring the most to this team for the rest of this season? Ruud, Vidic, or Scholes? Also, how many games would Jemba Jemba, David Bellion, and Alex Butner get in the squad today? Far away, Ed.
I tell you what, I'll answer the first part. You can do the second part. So the first one is Scholes right now, because chance creation and progressive passing is United's biggest problem. Much as Ruud might bang a load of goals in, I think he might not get the chances. And on the Alex Butner, Jemba Jemba
and David Bellion. The thing is, I actually think David Bellion would get some game time on the right wing. Like, Alex Butner's not getting any time ahead of Marlon Brandon Williams and Luke Shaw and Butner. They're at the kind of similar level, shockingly. But I think that, and Jemba Jemba wouldn't get any time in the, I mean, actually, he might play like the odd, not Premier League game, but like cup game or whatever.
I've played plenty of, I mean, like, I'm not, United's midfield of the mid 2000s wasn't any worse than this one. How many games did he play for United? Like 40 odd?
Yeah, quite. He really did. We had loads of questions on our Instagram, which I forgot to look up before we started recording, and I'm now like desperately scrolling through because I feel like they didn't happen a long time ago, but actually it turns out they did, and we've had loads of Instagram messages in the meantime because we're super popular and beloved or something. And my favourite thing on Instagram is Odion Ighalo's Instagram stories, though, and just how many there are. He's incredibly prolific in his sharing.
He's enjoying it. He and his family are loving it, and he's going to go bonkers when he scores against Chelsea a week from Monday.
We had a question. We talked about Tifo earlier. We had a question from Joe from Tifo. Hi, Joe. Which I then ended up having incredibly long exchanges via voice memo with Alex Stewart about who United's next manager should be. Because what Joe said was, assuming, let's just assume Solskjaer would be sacked in the summer, who would be the person that you would go to, taking Pochettino off the table, because it's the kind of obvious route one answer. And I kind of said, we need Pochettino from 5 years ago, or maybe like 10 years ago, just on the cusp. We need a manager who's on the cusp. And I was like, well, actually, Alex is...
But isn't that Nagelsmann?
Well, what Alex...
RB Leipzig, or is that too obvious
as
well?
What Alex said, which I thought was really interesting, is Pochettino from 10 years ago doesn't exist because of the availability of information, the revolution in the availability of information, even within the last decade. So there are no secrets in football. There are no best kept secrets in football anymore. Everyone who's paying attention is aware of all of these kinds of people. And we're in a position where, and I thought this was really interesting because it's interesting to talk to someone who's not a United fan about this, where he was saying it's such a toxic setup that a manager who's on the cusp of breaking through to the elite level would almost be crazy to pick United, because although there is the potential upside if you pull off a miracle, dance through the raindrops, that's so much less likely than the complete lack of structure is going to guarantee failure for any manager coming in and reputational damage. So given that they'll earn...
And that's one of among the many problems United have, is every smart manager will look at Ed Woodward and go, no. No way. Just no way. That is the guy who's going to go and execute the deals for me. No way.
I found our question. So Wellness Massage Alton, Martin, on that's, you know, I like it when people message us from their job Instagram accounts. Martin says,
I could do with a bit of a background, to be honest.
A question for our AMA. Now Marcus Rashford is out pretty much forever. Who do you fancy for our player of the year, or should we scrap the whole thing? I think if we haven't scrapped it in the last few years, we're never going to scrap it. And I think Marcus Rashford will end up being player of the year anyway, even missing 4 months of the season or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, because who's the other option?
I mean, Fred.
Fred, yeah.
Fred.
Fred for being slightly better than mediocre.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is he? Has he only been slightly better than mediocre? Is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Damn it.
Yes.
I was worried it was my standards that had slipped. Turns out.
Anyway, do we have more questions from the gram? Because we're powering through the hour on the AMA.
We are. I think we've got two questions left total.
Great.
So at Dos Damp, Ben says, "The midfield, discuss the good, the bad, the worst. I'm especially interested in thoughts on how static/deep they play. I'm convinced they're too deep, too static, and not creating problems by getting into the box." I think he's nailed our structural problem.
100%. No one runs ahead of the ball. Bruno may do. He didn't do in his debut at all. There was a Mirror article this week, by the way, really funny, in which one of the paragraphs uses, he says, Ole Solskjaer, who's failed to get the best out of new signing Bruno Fernandes. I was like, yeah, of all sticks to beat Ollie with. Yeah, so we may well see Bruno push further forward and getting ahead of the ball, which is desperately needed, but he didn't do in the first game. But
he definitely changed positions at halftime in that game, by the way. I said it kind of like a bit tentatively because I wasn't sure, but he definitely was playing at 10 in the first half and switched back to playing in the two and then didn't get ahead of the ball when he was playing in the two. I mean, it's interesting we were talking about Van Gaal earlier because that was the biggest problem under Van Gaal, wasn't it? Like Schweinsteiger and Schneiderlin sat behind the ball the whole time, or Fellaini and Carrick or whoever it was that was in there. And they've got enough, especially like Fred is like quite good defensively. Even Andres Pereira is quite good defensively. So there's plenty of... Oh, if Lingard plays, like, he can track back and tackle. So you'd think there's kind of... that they'd have the courage. The other one would have the courage to go. I guess Matic can't because he's too slow. And then Fred can't because he can't leave Matic defending.
Yeah, and none of them score many goals. Pogba, who's been out for most of the season for one reason or another... Without him, no one in the United midfield scores any goals.
Scott McTominay has 2 Premier League goals this season, I think.
Ooh.
All right, final question. I like this one. At D_C_81. Since a lot of ex-players won't stop banging on about the lack of characters in this United team, do you think the Keens and Inces would actually survive this era without catching actual felonies? No, not a chance. Like, I mean, Roy Keane could have been a brilliant footballer in this era, but he would have been a totally different footballer.
Yeah, look, I agree with that point, but he was that good that I think he'd have adapted to this era. But look, we've seen very good footballers dragged down in the last 7 years of United, and there's nothing to say that they wouldn't have. I mean, Paul Ince, his post-managerial phase is basically as an internet troll. Yeah, like, he'd have been on Insta having a go at people all the time, wouldn't he? People have hated him. Keane, I don't know. I just don't know whether his mind would have been able to process the fact that he was playing in such a bad team.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think there are degrees. Like Souness also was a fine player on the ball, but a psychopath off it. And I do wonder whether there are kind of players being weeded out of the game at a younger age who have got that kind of temperament, or if they're all being kind of transformed and adapted to players who use their aggression differently.
I suspect it's more the latter. Yeah. And then the coaching will coach the Marlon Brandon Williams out of as many players
as
possible.
That's actually probably a great example because, you know, we've seen Brandon Williams exert self-discipline. Like, you literally have seen it happen on the pitch, and you wonder whether, like, if it had been... I mean, we talked about Brian Robson earlier. Brilliant chat on... it's a kind of recurring theme on the Official United podcast of just people sharing stories of times that Brian Robson got revenge on someone that had fouled them. That's long gone, obviously. But, yeah, I think a lot of these... Like, certainly Keane was not an enforcer. That wasn't his primary role in the side. You know, Darren Fletcher says that Roy Keane's the best passer he ever played with, including Scholes in that, you know, so.
Yeah.
We said, like, we're going to do an AMA, not an AQA, because we might not answer all the questions, but I think there's like two or three questions we didn't get to and every other one got done.
All right. Plenty of questions, yeah. Anyway. We filled an hour.
I hope everyone's enjoyed it. I love doing these shows because it makes such a nice change not to just say the same things over and over again about United's performances.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm not a big fan of a mailbag episode.
Oh, really?
As our friends across the pond like to call it.
Interesting.
Normally, but there were some good questions here, so hopefully it will.
I like a mailbag episode in podcasts in general because it's a sort of like a pleasant drift through topics rather than lingering on one. I quite like that. The Chelsea game is Monday. We're recording this on the Sunday night, and it's a week and a day away. Who knows who's going to be fit? Who knows if Fred will have been dumped in a river somewhere for the things that he said? You know, who knows if Odion Ighalo will be fit to start?
Well, he hasn't played since the beginning of December, so not really.
He might be on the bench, though. There's a fair chance.
Chance. I'm assuming he will be,
and,
yeah.
And I have to say, I mean, if United can put together any kind of functional performance, which is a very substantial if, obviously, Chelsea are entirely fallible. I mean, as we said after the last game, they were the only side in the Premier League to generate less XG than us in their game last weekend. Whether or not United will be able to string three passes together, that's the key question. I'm looking forward to seeing Bruno in action again, which is, I think, it's a bit like earlier this season, just looking forward to watching Marcus Rashford play. Feels a bit like that with Bruno Fernandes at the moment.
It does. Look, it's a huge game, though, isn't it? I mean, United currently in eighth. So the narrative that I was going to call him Fergie for a second then. Solskjaer has been pushing that we are fifth and close to the top. Well, we lose this one and Wolves could be past us and Arsenal could be within a point of us. So we are currently looking above us at Sheffield United, Spurs, who've sacked their manager this season, Everton, who've sacked their manager this season.
Absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I didn't know we were eight, by the way. That happened today, didn't it, when Everton...
Yeah, and there's plenty of things you can beat Solskjaer with there, but the fact that he can't get the best out of Bruno Fernandes...
that's the worst crime he's committed so far.
That's the worst crime.
Sack him. All right, thanks for listening, everyone. As we said, on Friday, interview with Carl Anker. I really enjoyed it. First half of the interview, sort of United-centric, and then mostly for my own amusement, I just asked him about what it's been like to cover a Premier League team this season. We ended up having a bit of a chat about Southampton just because I found it interesting. So stay tuned for that one later. Not today. Don't stay tuned for that now because that's not going to happen now. Come back on Friday for that one. And then we will have a show out as soon as we can after the Chelsea game. Our schedule, which we've carefully designed around the fact that United are now officially a Europa League club, doesn't take into account Monday night football, so we'll work out what we'll do.
We'll record on Tuesday or something like that and dump it out midweek.
Yeah, something like that. So anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Patreon backers, stay tuned for some extra chat, and everyone else, I'll see you Friday with Carl, and then we'll be back in the middle of the week after that.
All right, bye now.
No question about that.